I'm Corinne Carey.
And I'm Chris Skelly. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, please visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or just want to give a shout out, you can text us at 518-888-3004.
My co-host and WOOC correspondent, Corinne Carey, sat down this afternoon with Melanie Trimble, Capital Region's Chapter Director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, to talk about the group's upcoming public meeting here in Troy.
Welcome to WOOC, Melanie. Nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
This coming Wednesday, June 13th at 6 p.m. at the Oakwood Community Center, the New York Civil Liberties Union will be hosting a forum addressing some of the hot-button civil liberties issues in Rensselaer County. Can you tell us what prompted the NYCLU to focus on the Capital Region at this particular moment?
Well, the Capital Region chapter of the New York Civil Liberties Union has always been involved with issues in Rensselaer County for many years. And after working on a recent immigration issue, many Rensselaer County residents came out in support of our position and ready and willing to oppose participation in this 287G program. So we wanted to harness those enthusiastic and engaged community and NYCLU members by educating them in other areas of concern in the county and help through active engagement to move Rensselaer County forward.
Well, I know that the agenda is wide-ranging. One of the issues on the agenda is Troy's nuisance laws. Can you talk a little bit about what nuisance laws are and what the forum plans to address?
Sure. These laws allow the city to cite landlords of a building in which police have been called to investigate a criminal complaint. The ordinances purport to allow the city to identify properties where criminal activity is prevalent, hoping that after a number of citations to close the buildings down. But landlords fear these citations and tend to penalize tenants with eviction if they call the police for help. And understandably, these ordinances cause a chilling effect on tenants who become less likely to report criminal activity for fear that they will be evicted. Victims of domestic violence are the most likely to suffer under these laws, and these ordinances cause communities to be less safe and people less likely to cooperate with law enforcement. So we'd like to talk about what we can do to try and prevent those types of things from happening.
It'll be interesting to see if landlords and tenants come out to discuss this, what the different perspectives are. Do you anticipate a kind of a broad community base that'll talk about these issues?
Oh, we certainly would like to engage landlords and talk to them about what they've seen happen within the city.
I think it's probably no surprise to our listeners that there have been problems in our county jail, because county jails all over the country are rife with abuse. What's going on at the Rensselaer County Jail, and why specifically is that something that the forum wants to address?
Well, let me say first that the Capital Region chapter has had an overall positive relationship with the Rensselaer County Jail over the years. We worked with them on improving their Prison Rape Elimination Act, and we also have been working with them to create an enhanced visitation program. These enhanced visitation programs help relieve the stress that children feel when their parents are incarcerated. So we hope to continue both of those aspects of our work with the facility, and we would love for the Rensselaer County community to come and help us do that.
So what kind of things are you asking the forum participants to come to you with regard to the Rensselaer County
Jail? Well, first of all, any kind of advocacy that we have within the Sheriff's Department helps them know that the public is interested in having a robust support of the LGBT community within the jail. Plus, the enhanced visitation program is going to help all around to have parents and children stay engaged. Reduces recidivism rates. There are many, many benefits to having an enhanced visitation program. So we're hoping that we can find the resources within the community to provide support to the children as they prepare for a visit and to decompress after a visit. And we need community support in order to do that. The jail will help us set up the program and provide other resources, but transportation is a huge problem. So we're looking at the community to help us provide that.
Ah, interesting. So immigration enforcement is certainly at the top of the news headlines with the current federal administration's policy of separating children from their parents. While immigration is a federal enforcement issue, jurisdictions across the country have either bucked the administration by designating sanctuary cities where local officials refuse to hand over those suspected of immigration offenses, or they've cooperated with or even partnered with federal officials. What's going on here in the Capital Region?
Well, I got to say, across New York State, we've been very supportive of the immigrant community, and it's only our local Rensselaer County Sheriff that wants to deputize two of his corrections officers to participate in enforcement of immigration law. Participation on local police officers, or whether they're even just corrections officers, often has a chilling effect within the immigrant community, and they're less likely to report crimes or participate with law enforcement in general. So we discourage participation in these programs. The sheriff has gone ahead and signed an agreement, and we believe he's just been hoodwinked by ICE, believing that if he participates in the program, it will increase revenue to his facility. We've assured him that this will not happen. It will actually cost the county more money, but we have yet to convince him to drop his interest in 287G, and so we want to encourage people to come out and continue putting pressure on the sheriff to abandon this program.
We're speaking with Melanie Trimble from the New York Civil Liberties Union's Capital Region chapter on the Hudson Mohawk magazine. Melanie, what kinds of things can community members do to learn more about this 287G program and the local sheriff? Are there resources online? Can folks learn more about what you're saying about the revenue generating?
Yeah, there's been a lot of material out there over the weeks, a lot of news articles, a lot of testimony on your interested in county politics, that this controversy has emerged. I would suggest calling our office or talking, you know, or emailing me. I can send you any material you want to know. Plus, please do come to the forum on Wednesday if you're interested in this issue, because we have the expert who's coming up from New York to talk about it. And it'll be, you know, we have continuing efforts and need new ideas on how to approach the sheriff.
Can you give us your website and your office phone number for listeners who are interested in either attending the forum or learning more?
Sure. Our office phone number is 518-436-8594. My email is mtrimble@nyclu.org, and our website is nyclu.org.
And folks can find information about the forum there?
Yes.
Great. So we know that there have been difficulties, so to speak, with our current district attorney, the chief prosecutor in Rensselaer County. We also know that the DA is facing an upcoming election. District attorneys wield an incredible amount of power, as we've seen in a number of recent police brutality cases and the handling of diversion and which cases to prosecute. NYCLU has some concerns about how DAs exercise their discretion regarding fundamental civil liberties issues. As a nonpartisan organization, NYCLU doesn't get involved in partisan politics, but the organization does have some concerns in the lead up to November's DA race. What are those concerns, and how does the organization plan to address them in advance of the election?
Well, these concerns cross every DA race across the country. We want to see people asking their candidates pointed questions, particularly when it comes to their positions on eliminating cash bail, so that people who can't afford to pay their bail don't have to languish in the facility and lose their job and lose their livelihoods. We also want to make sure that people ask about diversion programs, so that people who are accused of a crime can be diverted from jail and serve in some other capacity so that they don't have to go through the criminal justice system. We'd also like to see some efforts in reducing racial disparities. What is your district attorney going to do in training his assistant DAs in implicit bias and make sure that criminal defendants are not being discriminated against because of the color of their skin or their national origin and so on? We also want to suspend, we want to talk about suspending enforcement of minor offenses, like in cities, turnstile jumping or jaywalking, things that are just are so minor that we need not clog our criminal justice system with those types of offenses. So we want to encourage people to ask these questions as we go towards the election cycle, and hopefully the public will really understand where their district attorney falls on these issues.
Thanks. I really think it's important for people to pay attention to the fact that there are elections for, more than just the top federal offices. Our elected officials also include the chief law enforcement officers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Administration officials at RPI have come under fire for how they've handled student protest and free speech on campus. The forum is also planning to address some of those RPI issues. Can you tell our listeners what's happening there and what issues are implicated?
Yeah, the administration at RPI over the last several years has really diminished participation of faculty and students in the governing process of the university. Faculty and students want to be able to voice their opinions on how the school is run, and the president seems to want to quash those concerns. The faculty senate was dissolved a few years ago and stripped the faculty of any input into administrative decisions. The FBI was called in to investigate a visiting artist who was being employed by the school, and the school eventually removed him before his tenure was complete and refused to allow him to present his exhibit. And that recently students were protesting in a rally on campus, concerned about their radio station and their newspaper. And the administration called the Troy Police Department, asked them to come up and take footage of the students who were participating in the protest, and then used that footage to identify students and punish them for their participation in a speech activity on campus. So we want to get some ideas from the public as to what they think we can do. We'd like to talk about what what we can legally do with RPI, but we want to see what if there's a strong interest in following through with trying to be creative about a solution to increase faculty and student and alumni participation in the operation of RPI.
So once again, we're talking with Melanie Trimble from the New York Civil Liberties Union. Now, staff from the NYCLU will be at the Oakwood Community Center this coming Wednesday, June 13th at 6 p.m. for a two-hour public forum on these pressing civil liberties issues in the Capital Region. Melanie, can you talk about the format of the meeting and what those who attend can expect?
Yeah. Each speaker on the panel will talk about the individual topics just for 5 minutes, and then we're going to break into working groups so people can choose which topic they're most interested in, sit down with the speaker and another monitor and talk about, what it's all about, maybe give them more details and educate further, and then decide what they think as community members they want to pursue as a future objective under that certain issue, like what are next steps to move Rensselaer County forward.
Great. Where can folks go to learn more about this coming Wednesday's meeting?
Well, they can always call the office, 518-436-8594. Email me at mtrimble@nyclu.org, and I'll give you the RSVP link. Also, you can go to our nyclu.org website. It's on the calendar.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Melanie, and talking about this important event.
Thank you so much, Corinne.
That was a conversation with Melanie Trimble, the director of the New York Civil Liberties Union's Capital Region chapter, talking about the group's upcoming panel discussion on civil liberties in Rensselaer County, happening this coming Wednesday, June 13th at 6 p.m. at the Oakwood Community Center.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM.
The Troy Poem Project is a public arts endeavor run by frequent WOOC contributor Megan Marone. WOOC correspondent Aaron Pettinati recently sat down with Megan to discuss the analog media production component of her work.
I'm Aaron Pettinati, and today I'm interviewing Megan Marone, the core creative contributor to the Troy Poem Project, about the aesthetic significance of analog media in a digital age. The Poem Project is a community art endeavor that occurs on a biweekly basis in the summer months at the Troy Flea Market and intermittently at festivals and other public gatherings throughout the colder months of the year. It involves Megan sitting with an old-fashioned analog typewriter at a portable desk beside the Hudson River and writing poems on brown recycled paper about whatever topic people request. Megan, thanks for taking the time for this interview. It's nice to be talking with you.
Great to be talking to you.
So to start out, can you tell us a bit about the different types of poems that people have requested?
Well, the first idea that anyone ever had for a poem came from a social worker, and she was working with people who had been incarcerated, and she said that the people who she worked with had a great deal of feeling over what they had done and also family circumstances that had led them to make choices that they did and that they were preoccupied with guilt and anger. So she asked me to write poems about that. Over the years, I would say that people have asked me to write about friendship, really specific people in their lives, which is actually kind of tough because I don't know the people who they want me to write about. But then it leads to a really great discussion about people describing the people in their lives who they love. And then we construct a poem together. So it really becomes a dialogue. But I would say some of the more interesting requests would be that people have asked me to write about ladders to other realms of consciousness, the sturgeon in the Hudson River, their relationships, their feelings of hope or guilt and shame. So it's really nice because you bypass superficial dialogue with people and go straight to things that people are thinking about.
So at one level, it seems clear that the reason you're using a typewriter to write your poems in public is the greater practicality of doing so in comparison to having to set up a printer. But at another level, this choice of medium clearly resonates with deeper issues, namely the fact that we're living through an era in which the means for producing and disseminating texts has recently shifted overwhelmingly to digital media. And this goes along with a pervasive sense that the ease and almost instantaneous speeds with which texts can be digitally copied and circulated has cheapened their value as physical artifacts in which material labor has been invested. So my question is your work in some ways a response to this larger technological and cultural situation? Is the fact that you're producing singular, perishable, analog copies of your poems meant to add something to their overall value as artifacts?
Yeah, I'm not the first person to have the idea to sit with a typewriter and have dialogues with people about life. Many big cities have this. And what's really nice is that the actual typed poem becomes an artifact of the moment that you had with someone. So in order to write a poem about a person or for a person who you don't really know that well, you have to talk with that person for a while, and then you learn a significant amount about them, or you learn about the things that they love or that matter to them. And then once the poem's typed up, the poem becomes an actual physical memento of that conversation that you had. So yeah, I mean, it's the idea of making something that is meant to last. Analog is related to the word analogy. So analog media versus digital media has to do with the fact that analog media in general, whether you're talking about, you know, printing or making music, it's supposed to be more of a media that is analogous to the realm of the earth. There isn't an abstraction. Like if you're talking about analog music, a vinyl record is considered analog because the threads on the record really mimic sound waves, and the sound waves that hug tightly to soil and earth and material reality. If you're talking about analog media in terms of a typewriter, it's a little different. There's the actual handwriting of thought. The typewriter is interesting because it's a machine that processes your thought. But that machine is hammering out letters and instantaneous printing of keys that you've depressed. So it is mechanical for sure, but it's also analog in the immediate crafting of some sort of object. Whereas the digital world is all about abstraction. I mean, the word digital is related to digit and the whole idea of things being abstracted into numerals. There are really wonderful things about writing in the digital world. Like in a Google document, it's nice to have the collaborative component where you have a whole bunch of different people working on a single document and you can actually see your revision history. So I think in terms of writing media, there is a place for the digital writing media. Does that mean that we have to keep going forward in linear time and never use a typewriter again? Obviously, I don't think so. And the typewriter also might slow you down because you have to actually think before you type about what you're typing because you don't have some of the benefits of automatic editing and things like that. And people just seem to like it.
So you mentioned dialogue. And one of the oldest written works about media that theorizes about media for one of the first times in history is Plato's Phaedrus. And in it, Socrates expresses this concern that this relatively new technology of writing is actually fundamentally alienating because it takes people away from physical presence with each other. And he saw dialogue, the conversation of souls, people who are located in the same space with each other having a conversation as the best way to learn about people and to learn about the world. Do you think that what you're doing and what other people who are doing poem projects around the country are doing is to some extent, if not solving, at least addressing this problem, the ways that writing can be alienating by actually trying to connect to other people in dialogue when you're carrying it out?
Yeah. What your question just made me think of is classically romanticized literary eras in which there were actual physical gatherings of people who had certain aesthetic preoccupations, salons, or maybe even less sexy gatherings. Well, I mean, just different writers who might have been incarcerated or in really difficult situations, outcast revolutionary groups that then gather at points. Not to just focus on the highbrow literary salons of Paris in the 20s or something like that. So the physical gathering of people is really important and kind of exciting for sure, but also rather difficult in the way that civilization runs now, with there being a lot of physical dislocation and post-industrial drift, and then also the actual problem of spaces, like who owns property, where can you gather, what are public spaces, who really has control over public spaces. So it's always really exciting to do the poem project in gatherings where there are real efforts to make everyone feel welcome. So there's the Riverfront Park in Troy where the poem project has happened. There's Freedom Festival at the sanctuary. There's the holiday party at the sanctuary. So it's kind of catch as catch can in terms of community. But what you discover in terms of that gathering of souls, I'm going to use the Plato term of souls, is that people really have a deep need for that physical connection. Of course, you have, again, the digitized, abstracted numerical quantification of your online communities, but people actually seem to want real gathering. Real physical gathering has to do with real vulnerability and also honesty about both the joy and the sorrow of your life, that both exist. And there isn't so much of a digital interfacing of hiding. And I feel incredibly grateful to the people who have spoken to me with the Poem Project because, you know, it could be seen as a little bit of an odd thing. And there's just a positive response where people are curious. And as long as they get the sense that you're non-judgmental, you want to talk to them because they're another human, they're another soul in a gathered community space, then people open up. The dialogue becomes really important. And actually, I would say that the highest value that I have, and I have other friends who do this project with me, by the way, Cody Bingham, Molly Bingham, and we all walk away saying that the highest value is just the moment that you really have with the person, and then the poems become, again, the memento of that moment.
Well, thanks very much for this interview, Megan.
Thank you.
That was our WOOC correspondent, Erin Pedinati, speaking with Megan Marone about her work with the Troy Poem Project.
For those just tuning in, I'm Corinne Carey.
And I'm Chris Skelly. You're listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or if there's a story you want us to cover, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, if you love jazz, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, our new jazz program.
Now that the summer is here, the Troy Farmers Market is the place to be every Saturday in Monument Square. But what's happening with the square itself? WOC producer Dave Pueblo had a chance to sit down with Liz Komatal, director of the Troy Farmers Market, and get the lowdown.
So I'm in the studio with Liz Komatal, who formerly was known as Liz Hammond, who's in charge of the Troy Farmers Market. And we're basically here to talk about a little bit about that today. The last time you were in here was last fall, and a lot of things have changed. So why don't we start with, well, your own life first.
My own life. Yeah, I got married, obviously, so the name changed. That's been very exciting. Also, personally, we got a puppy, so I think those are, like, two very big, exciting things for someone.
Excellent. So one thing that seems to have stayed the same is that the Troy Farmers Market is doing really well. Is that true?
I'd like to think so, yes.
But there are a lot of changes afoot. I mean, every week that I go there, it seems to be bustling a little bit more, but I hear rumors, of course. I mean, one of the other issues that we've covered in the ensuing months is the proposals and everything else related to Monument Square, which, of course, is where you guys are situated, and so it's a key factor in your future well-being. So what can you tell me about where things are, where they've come from, maybe certain things that you guys have had, discussions you've had with the mayor's office, whatever you're able to tell me, I would be interested in knowing.
So yes, a lot of that is still in the planning and development process. So some of the nitty-gritty we're still in-house discussing, but we have participated in the DRI, the Downtown Revitalization Initiative, and we're also participating in this upcoming design charrette process that the city is hosting. As you said, we believe that One Monument Square and our placement within the downtown area has been very vital to our success over the years and also been a key player in helping make downtown what it is right now, quite a destination and a bustling place. So we are participating in these big things going on. So I guess I'll have to hear more of your specific questions, anything you'd like to know.
So when you say big things, and there is something coming up, I think, on the 19th, right?
The 18th through the 21st.
Okay. Tell me what that's about.
So the city is hosting a design charrette for One Monument Square, and essentially what it is are multiple designs are going to be presented to the public for public comment and public input about what should actually happen at One Monument Square. There have been several stakeholders in the process, different entities such as the Farmers Market that have kind of thrown our hats into the ring being like, we want to be a part of this space. We also believe that through this design charrette, it kind of makes it Troy's project. And we feel very much like a Troy project ourselves. So during this 3-day process, everyone is invited to come and kind of speak on what you want and even what you don't want at the site. We're definitely looking for public support. So if anyone loves the market and feels that it's deserving of such a permanent space, whatever that ends up being, we're defaulting to the process for that. Mm-hmm. But we definitely want to have a presence there.
And who are some of the other players maybe that want their own version of reality imposed there?
Oh, I can't really discuss that. The ones I've heard are mostly that we're not, you know, working with and talking with are
The movie theater.
I don't know anything about that one coming up again. But there's definitely other parties that are interested in varying degrees. in terms of what they want. Did you attend, if you attended any of the DRI workshops that happened over the past month, that was kind of a great introductory or to what I think the public will be coming out on as to what they really want to see for the site.
So I wasn't able to attend those, but maybe give me a brief run through about what those were about.
So the DRI workshops were for the DRI grant, which has already been applied for. That's the big $10 million regional competition that Hudson and Glens Falls have won the past 2 years. Troy's been a great runner-up, but we're hoping that we can prevail in this, or Troy prevails in this competition round. But essentially, the DRI workshops were, from my understanding, a way for the city to get public input as to what the DRI could be shaped for, and to hear more of the public's needs. Mm-hmm. Troy's very special in the fact that people really get heard, even up and to our political offices. So it was really an opportunity for people to speak out and kind of shut down a lot of maybe possibilities. Mm-hmm. What ended up being an actual result of that, I'm not sure how the city has used that information. You'd have to talk to someone in the city's office.
Well, just for the record, we would love to have the mayor come in and talk to us about this. Well, seriously, I mean, just for transparency's sake, because I've heard from unnamed sources that the city was very receptive to heading in a direction that, you know, favored the farmers market and that type of interactive model, and that it's withdrawn from that a little bit in the last several weeks.
Oh,
yes, and I don't know what that means, but I think we're all very interested in the charrette as you described it. I just don't know whether that's going to be transparent, whether it's going to be real or not. You know.
Yeah, I think everyone definitely has, you know, those concerns, I think, are genuine, and it would be natural to have those. But from our perspective, we think the city and especially the mayor are doing a really good job at helping trying to facilitate that public input. In years past, kind of the failures of the site, to use the term loosely, have felt like it wasn't a local project. Mm-hmm. And now it's really being attacked from a local or being approached from a local perspective. So, yeah, I say get the mayor in here. I bet he'd be happy to talk, but I don't know. He's always at the market every week, so maybe you'll see him there.
Well, you should put in a plug for us. So let's just go to what you would envision as being a good outcome for that space. Could you get into specifics about what you would like to see and any kind of structure that would be built there?
The only specifics that I can really talk about at this time are that the market, we would love a flexible space. We believe that parking and public and civic space are essential to the success of this project. You know, having access to the river, really having the site connected to the river and allowing the public use of some great green space. But in terms of more of the finer details, what the building would look like, we're really defaulting to this charrette process. We've had plans and visions in the past, and we're definitely taking inspiration from markets all over the world that have taken that next step into having a more permanent space to fit their needs. So we've kind of thrown in some of our needs, but we're really defaulting to the process to see what Troy wants and what can be ultimately successful at that site.
Mm-hmm. When I was doing interviews around the square about 6 months ago, just talking to different business owners especially to see what they were interested in, there were a lot who were noncommittal. And then there were a few who definitely had a clear opinion. One of them was, you know, why don't we have a city hall there? Like, why do we have to rent our city hall? So I'm wondering if that idea has come up in your own...
Really, like, wait to reveal... in this upcoming charrette process.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about that. We only have about a minute or so left, but, you know, where is it going to be? You said it runs for several days.
Yes, it's happening at the Art Center. The first session is on the 18th, so this upcoming Monday, because today's this upcoming Monday, and I think it starts at 4:30, but you can go on the city website, and we'll also be having more information about the charrette and what you can do to help support the farmers market during this process, available on our website, troymarket.org. So those are the two places I would go to look if you would want more information in terms of time and what's being discussed.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, wow. That's always such a big one.
Well, and
thank you so much for having me. Any opportunity I can get, especially connecting with you guys over here doing such great things, I really, really appreciate. So thank you for having me.
Sure, sure. Okay. So, Liz Komatow?
Yes.
Okay. I'll get it eventually. The Hammond just stays in my head, though. But yeah. Thank you very much for coming in, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
That was Liz Komatow of the Troy Farmers Market. Stay tuned for more information about the market and other developments in Monument Square.
Some say that with the proliferation of online blogs, specialized news outlets, and digital special interest forums, that print